This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. When Silicon Ranch, based in Nashville, built a solar farm here in Chattanooga 8 years ago, it was the largest solar power facility in Tennessee. The 65-acre farm helped to make the Volkswagen plant here the greenest car plant in the world at that time. Now, Silicon Ranch is building a new complex in Jackson, Tennessee, to power Facebook's data center in Gallatin, and this solar complex will be nearly 10 times the size of the Chattanooga farm. Matt Kisber is co-founder and chairman of Silicon Ranch. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
This solar farm, this complex that is going to be built in Jackson, Tennessee, 10 times the size of the solar installation here in Chattanooga that was built less than a decade ago. How is it possible to scale up and get cheaper to generate solar power so fast?
Well, if you look at what's been taking place in the electricity generation technology market, solar has been a quickly evolving technology. Just when the Volkswagen plant was built in, the solar plant was built in 2012, the cost to install solar at utility scale, at that large scale, has dropped by over 70%. And that has afforded the technology to become the leading new source of electricity generation nationally. And companies like Facebook, who this project in Jackson, Tennessee will serve, are working to become carbon neutral by having their data centers and their activities all be powered over time by carbon-free generation sources.
You also need to not only scale up for today, but you have to scale up for a year from now, a few years from now, a few decades from now, especially as the need for more and more data just continues to exponentially grow.
If you look at the four largest data center companies that most consumers know, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Microsoft, or Google, make it five, they all have sustainability commitments where they want their facilities to, over the next few years, become carbon neutral. And so when you think of the data center Facebook is building in Gallatin, Tennessee, that this plant will be one of the solar projects that helps power it, it takes anywhere from 3 to 7 of these type solar plants, depending how big the data center is, to power a data center of that size. And we've been fortunate working with the electric co-ops in the state of Georgia. Facebook has a data center outside of Atlanta that the co-ops serve. We have 7 solar farms either in operation or under construction that will be serving that one campus, which will be made up of a number of different buildings. But that gives you the idea of the scale of the type of need that these data centers have. And you're right, as we use more and more data, the demand for more capacity just grows exponentially.
Let's talk more about this particular model of generating solar power. What's being built in Jackson will allow the land underneath the solar array to remain in agricultural production. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and we have pioneered this concept marrying regenerative land practices with solar generation. And we became familiar through the work we were doing in Georgia with a large organic rancher farmer in southwest Georgia who introduced us to the concept. We were going to be building a 1,000-acre-plus solar farm near his operation. He was afraid, of course, our land practices could pollute his activities. And so we sat down and learned from him how he managed his land, how we could be better stewards of the land that we own. And through that, we created, have trademarked this regenerative energy practice where we look at the land as an asset. And that asset is it can be continued to use for agricultural purposes. So we plant vegetation that will support the kind of agricultural activities we want, such as we're having sheep grazing at a number of our solar farms right now. That helps to allow the land to become more fertile because it's natural decomposition of the organic matter. So the over time, the land becomes richer as opposed to less fertile from the use of chemicals and other agents. And it is another way of using the land as a carbon sink to attract and put carbon back into the soil where it can be used in the future to fertilize vegetation and help provide further agricultural opportunities. So we're very excited about this. We are deploying this technology in our new solar farms through engineering to design to support regenerative energy. And it's fun to watch the videos of the sheep unloading and moving around the solar farms. There's technology where we have screens in our office. We can see what part of the solar farm the sheep are actually grazing in. And it's also a job creator because these sheep become the organic meat products that are available in a number of well-known grocery stores. And so it creates further demand for jobs in not just as with working with the sheep, but in the processing plants and the distribution chain. So as a former economic development commissioner, I'm always looking at how we can improve community impacts. And this is one that's been very exciting.
Without letting the sheep get in the way of the solar array.
That's right. And the sheep work very well. I mean, we are actually looking at how we can design solar farms so that cattle could graze, which creates a whole other host of issues that we need to work through. But that's a goal and objective we have so that, as we know, beef products are consumed at a larger quantity than sheep products. And so if we're going to be able to meet the growing solar farm demand using regenerative energy, we're also going to have to look at how we can use other type of livestock as well.
Tell us more about the partnership with TVA.
So in the seven-state TVA, Tennessee Valley, the distributors have contracts, EPB in Chattanooga, for instance, that require either all or most all of their power to be generated and sold to them by TVA. So for solar generation and some other types of energy generation, TVA will contract with companies like ours to produce the solar generation. We sell it to TVA, and TVA then resells it to the local distributors or their direct serve customers. It's an efficient model. TVA has been a good partner. Part of the reason they control all aspects of this relationship is they want to ensure that their transmission grid system maintains its 99.999% reliability. And part of the way they do that is by working with companies like us who then work with them in their transmission activities and they resell to their distributors. But TVA is a strong economic development organization as well. They've got a great ED function led by John Bradley, wonderful professional. In my days when I was commissioner, we worked very closely. The state still works very closely with TVA. And because of power is such an important component of economic development decisions like Facebook, where to put a data center, TVA is an important part of that economic development discussion.
What are the unique advantages? What are the unique challenges for advancing solar power in this area?
The unique advantages are that you are working with TVA, and now with their LPC flexibility option, the distributors who sign the 20-year partnership agreements with TVA can procure approximately 5% of their energy load directly from companies like ours, which allows them to be able to get locally procured solar that they can use for economic development or for other purposes. My hat goes off to Jeff Lyash. He's really looking at what does TVA need to look like in the future and leading the organization in that direction, and I commend him for that. The unique challenge is that you're dealing with the TVA transmission system and you're dealing with local distributors, and it takes a lot of time because you have to do a number of studies, and sometimes you have to repeat a similar study with the local distributor that you've also done with TVA. And so it's part of the reason why it takes a couple of years to get from the announced project to the commissioning of that project, because there is a lot of studying and engineering that takes place before you turn the first spade of dirt.
And then beyond TVA, what are the unique advantages and unique challenges for this type of power in our region?
You know, the unique advantage is we're blessed by having a great deal of celerity. You know, a lot of people want to say that we're not the desert Southwest, and fortunately we're not. But the celerity in parts of Tennessee is approximately 95% of the desert Southwest. And when you look at the southeast area of the country as a whole, we're blessed to have good celerity that allows for significant amount of energy generation from a solar farm. So you're seeing utilities and their customers, and a lot of it's being driven by the customers, turn to more and more solar generation. Consumers want to buy products that they feel comfortable are not harming their environment. And so they're looking today to ensure that the product is being made using sustainability practices, and the electricity generation is part of that. So that's a unique opportunity and advantage. Some of the challenges is, as distributed generation grows, finding those strategic injection points into the national grid, into the transmission system, will become scarcer and scarcer. And I like to think of it as the interstate highway system. When it was first built, finding nice off-ramp locations for gas stations was easy to do. Today, as it's more fully developed, it's much harder. And if you were trying to be in a strategic location, it's much more difficult to find those. The transmission grid is going to develop in that similar manner.
And of course, this complex being built in Jackson, that hits very close to home for you.
Yes, it does. I'm a native of Jackson and represented this area in the state legislature for 20 years. It's very personally rewarding to be able to do something in my hometown. We've got 135 plus projects around the country. This is definitely very meaningful to me, knowing that it's going to contribute tax dollars to the community, but it's also giving them another tool in their toolbox to use for economic development. And Jackson's been a wonderful hometown, and certainly value the relationship.
And if people want more information about your company, where can they go online?
So our website is www.siliconranch.com. We have a lot of information, and it also has links for how to contact the company if you have specific questions or opportunities.
All right, Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you. Certainly enjoyed being with you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
I'm Will Davis, and this is Tennessee Valley StoryCorps. Stories from people who went to the StoryCorps mobile recording booth when it came to Chattanooga last year. Today, Yolanda Putman and her mentor, Maria Noel, talk about being newspaper reporters in Chattanooga.
So I want to thank you, Maria, because for whatever reason, you said, I think you can write, because I wrote one story, but it was about a police officer, and you helped me like very hands-on. So I'm glad you didn't say, man, she's never going to get it, because I required hands-on. And but the story came out, and I was so proud. It ran Metro Section, the center of B1, so proud. And I had it on my wall. It was a part of my clippings for my first job at the Chattanooga Times Free Press, because it was all I had. Everything else was just poems. And so I'm very thankful for that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So what made you think? I mean, not only could you do it, but you thought you could help somebody else. What made you think you could do it? And then what gave you the confidence to reach down and get me?
I knew no one else could tell my story or our stories. And I remember it was kind of interesting after 6 months of being a reporter at the Times, I wrote a series, a four-day series on gangs in Chattanooga. Well, that four-day series, the first 2 days, they sold out of newspapers.
Mm.
And so after writing it, a lot of people started complaining. They didn't know there was a black newspaper reporter. So they just thought someone had written these negative things about the community.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they saw the article, they started screaming, she's an Uncle Tom. She's writing about our community. And I had a friend who was riding a bus who said people were saying such negative things about me. He wouldn't tell anyone that he knew me.
So to do your part, it was okay to be called an Uncle Tom? Because that would really bother me.
Well, I'm going to tell you what's funny. My father, who did a lot of things in history. I did a lot of things for Chattanooga. Set us down years ago when we were, I was in junior high school, I remember. And Chattanooga, I think they were having riots. And he was asked to come and help kind of stop things. And he sat us down at the table and said, look, you're going to hear things, you know, from people. Some people are going to call me an Uncle Tom. You tell him your dad is not an Uncle Tom. He's got an education. He's an Uncle Thomas. He said, but you move forward because you don't worry about what people say about you. You worry about what you do. Mm-hmm. And so you write these stories to try to get someone to take charge and do something. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But you know you've done your part in recording the history. And so it didn't matter to me that people called me names. I was getting people to act. As a writer, I want to be remembered as someone who painted the right picture or told the right story. How do you want to be remembered? Because there are not many African-American newspaper reporters in Chattanooga.
Right. I want to be remembered as someone who told the right story. I think I'd also like to be remembered as an advocate. I wanted to speak for people who otherwise didn't have a voice.
Everybody has a story.
Thank you.
Yes. Everybody has a story. Everybody has something to tell. Everyone that comes to the table brings something to the table, a uniqueness about themselves.
Right.
When you're going out there crafting stories, just craft their individual stories because they are somebody.
Right, right.
That was Maria Noel and Yolanda Putman. This conversation and others like it are available online at wutc.org. And you can subscribe to the Tennessee Valley StoryCorps podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This series is produced and edited by me, Will Davis, and created at the Pod Lab at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
This is Scenic Roots. As always on Tuesday, we have music from Barking Legs. The theater is still closed, but they are again hosting virtual jazz performances on Wednesday evenings, starting at 7. Tomorrow evening, guitarist Sean Perkinson and trumpeter Nathan Warner will be playing for a couple of hours. Details, as always, are on the Barking Legs Facebook page. The music this afternoon is one of the last performances played before an audience in the theatre early this past spring, featuring saxophonist Greg Tardy with his quartet.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming out and braving the health scares, and hopefully you enjoy. I'd like to introduce the band really quick. The first two people I'll introduce are both students at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. They're very, very good. We have from Nashville, Mr. Griffin Fotoglow. From somewhere in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, we have Mr. Rob Linton. On the piano, from Knoxville, but he's presently in New York City playing with everybody, Mr. Tabor Gable. Okay, so it's going to be a little loose. So I'm not exactly sure what order of music we're going to do. A little less organized than usual, but we're going to start off with an apt title. This is something called Forgiveness. Hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That that song was Forgiveness. It's one of the tunes I like to start off my sets with, just celebrating the love and love and salvation and forgiveness of God. So that's what that one's about. And this configuration right now that you're hearing is it's the first time this configuration has played together. And well, actually, the second time, we played yesterday, and it was brought together. There's a really good school in Knoxville that's dedicated to helping young musicians, high school musicians and middle school musicians, and to be able to get to be able to get lessons. And it's a school called the Joy of Music School, and essentially we did a fundraiser for them yesterday. And Tabor was so generous to come into town and donate his services, because he's in high demand up in New York, but he's a graduate from the Joy Music School, and so he wanted to give back. And so so I thought, while he's here, well, let's run over to Chattanooga. And and so it's really a blessing to have him here. And and then Griffin and Rob are two of the finest students at the University of Tennessee right now. We've got we've got some other great ones, but these guys are really special. And so it's really great to have him here. Yeah, this drummer, he's 20 years old, so you've got to keep an eye on him. And
I'm not sure.
And he's 23. So, you know, so this is like, you know, and he's an old guy, he's 28. Do it. But it's, well, I guess that makes me really old, because I'm twice as old as all of them. But I like to feature them for a minute. I know my name's on the bill and everything, but I want y'all to get a taste of the future. And so I'm going to let them do a tune trio. And
is there one you'd rather do? Or?
We're going to do, well, they're going to do Upper Manhattan Medical Group by Billy Strayhorn. All right. Thank you. It's Tabor Gabriel on the piano.
The Greg Tardy Quartet, live from Barking Legs on Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.